Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We're going to buy this property, sell it in a year's time when I get it rezoned and, you know, upzoned, sell it for $5.5-6 million, and they'll make $1 million. So I thought it was a good deal for them, a good deal for me. 20 doors just shut in my face. Hey.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyne Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with property expert John L. Fitzgerald, who operates his business in 5 states across Australia. We'll follow his journey as he evolves from 18-year-old fledgling developer to the author of 7 Steps to Wealth and the man who set up a $3 million deal that nobody thought he could pull off. Starting his company when he was very young, Fitzgerald has invaluable experience in creating and running a business, but it is finding a purpose and balance along the way that has been a challenge.
My name is John Leonard Fitzgerald, and my company's JLF. And I started my company when I was 18 years old, which is crazy. And I must have had these egotistical visions of grandeur of having, you know, all these companies. And now I suppose I've got 26 companies that I've operated for over 30 years. And I look back on the whole journey and say, wow, you do need to have some balls. You need to get out there and make a statement of who you are or who you want to be at certain stage. But you've also got to have some balance to that. And I suppose during the interview, I'll give your listeners some of the balances I've found being valuable to me in creating, running a business and finding purpose in both those two things.
So what does he do in any given day?
My main business is property, and I do property development, and I also run a school for youth at risk. So I do two things on any particular day. I coach my headmaster at the school. We have 100 boys who have been kicked out of all mainstream schools, and we have, you know, just shit going on all the time there. And the second thing is I oversee my operation, which is in 5 states, and we do, you know, we've done 370 developments in 5 states around Australia, and we're developing, you know, pretty much all over the place.
Wow, that is phenomenal. I mean, how do you manage all that? That's the thing. It's quite a lot going on.
As I think about it, I think I need to go and have a lie down right now.
Growing up, Fitzgerald's upbringing was coloured by the trauma of a parent's passing and financial struggle.
Well, I find my story interesting in this regard. I'm a Melbourne boy, born and bred in Moorabbin, one of 5 kids from an Irish Catholic family. And, you know, Fitzgerald, obviously, the Fitzgeralds immigrated from Ireland, you know, in the early 1900s and landed in Melbourne. And grandfather had 11 kids, and my dad was the youngest of those 11, so to speak, or 10. When I was 8 years old, I'm the third in the pecking order. I have 2 older brothers and 2 younger sisters. My dad was killed in a car accident, and it was life is an amazing thing, because the timing of it couldn't have been, you know, any worse for mum, because dad had, you know, 3 businesses, menswear stores that were going okay, but really needed his involvement. And mum was a stay-at-home mum. And on top of all of that, they had had a house under construction, half under construction. So, you know, life just was turmoil. And mum was a 40-year-old widow who had to then go into business, and she hadn't worked in, you know, for the last 15 years as she was bringing up kids. The three older kids, which is I was 8 and my two other brothers 10 and 12, a year later, mum said, look, you know, we're struggling. We need to send you away to boarding school. And this is 1974. And so I got the news that I was going to be sent to that she went to the Christian Brothers in Melbourne and said, will you take these boys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I was shipped off to Christian Brothers College or St. Pat's in Ballarat, which became, you know, there was a whole controversy and this whole George Pell thing going on at the moment. The epicenter of that was in Ballarat and probably St. Pat's and everything going on there. And, just a sidebar on this, so I was listening to, I don't take that much interest in it, but I was listening to the, bits and pieces on the news in relation to the inquiry. And I heard a lady say that, you know, the damage that had happened over that time can be equated to the fact that 40 kids or, you know, their families committed suicide who attended St. Pat's during that particular time. And I was in my garage listening to that, thinking, wow, I actually know some of those kids who committed suicide, and then just put two and two together that they must have been victims of, you know, the sexual abuse.
After completing his schooling there, he was ready to get out and find a positive direction in his life.
But anyway, I landed at boarding school at age 10 in 1974. And I'd honestly say I spent 5.5 years. I got kicked out of that school in year 11, what you call. And then crazily enough, mum begged them to take me back in year 12 because, I just thought there was no chance of me getting matriculating. So they took me back in year 12. But the minute I finished school, I was out of there. I was out of Ballarat and I was out of Melbourne. And I hitchhiked from Melbourne. I finished in 1979. In January 1980, I went downstairs, said to mum, had a backpack, mum, I'm off. Where are you going? I'm 16 years old.
Yeah.
Mum, I'm hitchhiking to Queensland. That's it. There's nothing for me in Melbourne. And I've had a gutful. how is that? I don't know what happened. You know, I must have been. I when I think back, I think, geez, imagine having a 16-year-old like me. It would be terrible.
Yeah.
And so, mum, look. By all means, she was. I think she was glad to get rid of me. You know, she thought, well, whatever happens, I wash my hands of you because I can't look after you. You know, so, okay, fine. So I hitchhiked from Melbourne to Queensland, and that's when I think life took another turn. You know, and I often tell kids, who I mentor, you know, John, what should I do when I finish school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So here's what you should do: get out of your comfort zone and go on and discover yourself. And the thing about leaving Melbourne and coming to Queensland, I did not know anybody. So I had to reinvent myself. And I could reinvent myself in whatever way that I thought, you know, I wanted to be. And I got here in 1980, there in the middle of a massive property boom going on. And you could feel it. You could feel it in the energy, you know, as you always do. And I thought, wow, I've got to get into that. I've got to be a part of that. So I started work as a 16-year-old. I started work in a real estate office, selling real estate for a fantastic guy called Bert Cockerell. And Bert was the jack of all trades. He was, he did the fishing report on the radio. He owned the Palm Beach theater. He owned another motel in Miami, and he was building a big house himself. And I spent a bit of time with Bert, but he wasn't a mentor in the sense that he couldn't give me the time. And then I sort of thought, I need to find a mentor, you know, someone who's been in the business for 20, 30 years, done lots of deals that can really guide me. Because I had a lot of energy, but no direction.
Then Fitzgerald reached out to the wealthiest person he knew for guidance.
I reached out to the wealthiest guy I could find who owned shopping centres, and he connected me with a Jewish guy called George Margolis. And George was a guy who owned probably half of Cavill Avenue, Surfers Paradise, back in the day, and lost it all when he went into land subdivision in Gladstone in the 1970s, in the crash of 1970s. And he was emerging, and he moved back up to Queensland in 1979, And he was funded by some Jewish connection from Melbourne. And he took me in and literally took me under his wing.
That's great.
And this is probably the turning point that I say to people, because success is about your habits, you know. And George used to say to me, John, do two things every day you don't like doing. And I remember thinking to myself, well, the one thing I hate doing is getting up early. So I thought that is the number one on my list. So since then, I made a dedicated, and he said, then do two things every day you don't like doing, and then learn to like your dislikes. Learn to like your dislikes. Make that a habit. So I used to get up every morning at 6 o'clock, and now, right, you know, 35 years on, I'm still getting up. In fact, I get up at probably 5 o'clock every day. And the other thing that he said that I hated doing was knocking on doors, you know. Oh, just the fear of rejection, of all that sort of stuff. And I just knocked on doors and knocked on doors and knocked on doors. And today I'm still knocking on doors. You know, I'm still doing that, whether it's doors, you know, billionaires' doors in China. I'm just out there. If someone's moving and shaking, I want to know what's going on. I want to meet them. I want to find out about it. And I think they're the habits that I've adopted, you know. Firstly, learn to like your dislikes, you know, and most importantly, you know, face those obstacles and challenges rather than turn away from it.
His mentor also taught him another valuable lesson, which became the basis for Fitzgerald's book, 7 Steps to Wealth.
And the second thing he taught me, which is interesting, you know, other than that, there's only truth in numbers and success is repetition. And that was a penny that really did take a while for me to drop. And that's the you know, when I wrote the book 7 Steps to Wealth, which is we're going to talk about a little bit later in its 8th edition, the one thing that I tried to communicate, or the two things that I tried to communicate to Australians about real estate, number one is that the money's in the land. The land is the appreciating asset. And number two, the mathematics of success is compound growth. That's what it is. That's the maths. Warren Buffett uses it. Bill Gates uses it. Anyone uses compound growth. So if someone's got a formula for success, I will ask them, what is the formula that gives you compound growth? And that's what I learned from my mentors. So that was the beginning, so-called, of me. I'd have to say I outgrew George in the real estate side of it in, you know, within a few years.
His parents also had somewhat of an influence in his property journey.
If Dad had been alive, he would have had a strong interest in property, because I knew he loved property. And Mum sort of, because I'd been working in property, she started buying houses, you know, and she did well out of it. But she wasn't an active property investor, or somebody committed to that as an investment tool that was going to make her wealthy. Albeit she did. She had, you know, quite a few houses. And she did build up when she sold her businesses, and she did, she retired, sold her businesses. She put her money into property because she felt it was better in property. And this is back in the 70s, 80s, high inflation times. She felt her money was better in property than in the bank.
And Fitzgerald's passion for property is clear through his close connection to the real estate industry over so many years.
I've never been in any other industry. I've done just real estate. So I started selling real estate, then I did syndication, then development, and then, you know, then when I could, just started buying and selling and trading myself, developing, and then building my own portfolio. So have not done another job.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into Fitzgerald's property journey when he first started to invest.
I started building houses, spec houses, and I was buying land for like $16,000 a block, 1,000 square meter blocks, and building houses for around $30,000.
The deal that allowed him to continue to grow to great heights as an investor?
I sort of thought, well, look, if I go down and see the developers and ask them to loan me $3 million and I take them a deal.
And that's next. I'm Tyne Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Western Australia is tipped to be the next property hotspot. If you're looking to invest and build in WA, take advantage of the affordable land market and record build times with Plunkett Homes. Visit propertyinvestory.com/build to find out why they are WA's most established home builder. With over 150 years of experience, Plunkett Homes helps you develop turnkey homes across WA. To get your fixed price demolition or site works and to maximise profits and minimise time, visit propertyinvestory.com/build. And now back to the show. The first deal Fitzgerald undertook was in building spec houses.
No, the first deal I ever did, the first big deal I ever did was sort of like a, I started building houses, spec houses, and I was buying land for like $16,000 a block, 1,000 square meter blocks, and building houses for around $30,000. So the total cost was $46,000. I'm selling them for $55,000, and that was a lot of profit, you know, back then. And I was sort of trying to get a business up and running to do that. And my skill set wasn't actually in building, but my skill set was actually finding and buying the land really, really well.
Since then, he has turned all that into a system that works. But how did he manage to balance his career with actively buying and selling property?
Well, you know, the thing about my mentors is that they teach you habits, and those habits lead to you building a team of people around you, because you attract people similar to you, same habits. And once you realize that, you realize that 2 + 2 = 5. So I then had builders who, hey, John, we want to do business with you. We like you. You know, you get up early, you run. And had other people, you know, I want to do stuff. And when you get people saying that, you know, you think, wow, I've got resources, I beyond myself. So that's when, you know, the penny started to drop for me.
By the age of 20, just 2 years into his journey, he found a great opportunity, but it would cost him.
So back in 1982-83, I started knocking on doors in Sydney. You know, and I was, 20 years old, asking them to loan me $3 million because by that stage, I'd actually been buying and selling property. So I always think really big, you know, and I thought money was coming to Southeast Queensland from mainly Sydney and Melbourne. And a lot of it was, the wealthy developers, and a lot of them happened to be Jewish. And I sort of thought, well, look, if I go down and see the developers and ask them to loan me $3 million and I take them a deal. And what I did was I found a deal. There was a massive block of land in Logan Home behind the Logan Hyperdome. And it was approved and zoned for 700 blocks. And the owner had gone broke. And the owner was a guy called John Bartlett, and he'd gone into default. And the mortgage to that property was by a company called Entrad. And Entrad were just a property holding company that sold it to Bartlett and had a mortgage. And I knew the guys at Entrad. And I said to them, look, what if I can find a buyer to back me, you know, to buy it? I'll buy that block of land off you for $2.8 million. So they took a chance on me and gave me 6 months free option to find a partner or backer to buy that block of land. Now, the land was about 250 hectares. And I knew that the secret was that it was approved for 700 lots, but the average size block was around 1,100 or 1,200 square meters. And I could redesign the subdivision down to 700 square meters and improve the yield to maybe 1,200 lots. So I knocked on doors in Sydney asking people to, you know, loan me $3 million. And we were going to buy this property, sell it in a year's time when I get it rezoned and, you know, upzoned, sell it for $5.5-6 million, and they'll make $1 million. So I thought it was a good deal for them, a good deal for me.
He soon found this was a lot harder than he thought.
20 doors just shut in my face. People laughed at me and saying, you know, One guy, because I'm like 20 something years old, where's your dad? You know, that would be embarrassed. We'd be embarrassed, you know, giving a 20-year-old $3 million. But there was one door that just opened, and it was a company called Daneford Limited, who'd built most of the high rise on the Gold Coast. And the chairman was a guy called Michael Hirshon, who went on to become just a fantastic, like a father figure and a mentor of mine. And it took him 5 minutes to weigh me up and make a decision and said, here's what we'll do. I'll get to know you over the next couple of months. And if I like you and my wife likes you, we'll do the deal. So he came up to Queensland. We spent some time. And it's mentorship and their personal relationships. What are my habits? What do I do? You know, all of those sorts of things. And they funded it. And sure enough, we bought the block for $2.8 million. I rezoned it for 1,200 blocks, and then 6 months later, I took them a contract for $5.8 million.
Wow!
For that property, and this is 30 years ago. Still,
yeah,
a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
So yeah, and I sat there, and there were three old Jewish guys, Dr. Morvan Dan, Tibor Balog, and Michael Hirshon. And I'm sitting there, and I was sitting there. I wasn't shitting myself. I was just sitting there, you know, opposite the table, thinking I'm the friggin' golden boy, and I've just made $1 million, because the deal I did was in, they get half the profit plus 20% interest on their money.
Wow.
which at the time wasn't a lot, you know, because they hadn't put in the whole $3 million. We borrowed money from the bank. So the net to me was I would get $1 million. And this is an amazing story, because it's life-changing. And I'm sitting there with these three old guys. And I said, guys, it's been fantastic doing business with you. Here's the contract for $5.8 million. You sign it, and we're done. You know, and we'll celebrate. And then we'll be each go our own way.
And did it happen?
They looked at me and said, what are you talking about? And I said, what do you mean? What am I talking about? I said, we did a deal where you loan me $3 million. I buy this, we sell it. And then we're going. No. That's not how it works. They said, you're our boy now. You're with us. So, you know, you've got to do all deals with us. And I said, what? Yeah, that's how it works. You know, if you have success with someone, you keep going. I said, well, look, guys, I'm telling you now, I was 23 or something. I said, guys, I've made $1 million out of this. And, you know, I want $1 million. And they said, well, no, look, let's develop the property. You know, 1,200 blocks in Brisbane, let's develop the property. And I said, no, I want $1 million. They said, what do you want $1 million for? I said, oh, you know, I just threw them, I want to buy a new house. And they said, how much is a new house? I said, $400,000. So they got the checkbook out and wrote me a check for $400,000 and said, here's the $400,000. Go and buy yourself a new house, tear up the contract, and let's get to work.
At 23 years old, it was the biggest check he'd ever seen in his life, which he believed to be a divine sign in the direction he was meant to be heading towards.
I took the check, sat in the park, looked at it, and thought, you know, I'm a person of destiny. God or the universe has put me in this position, sent me to these people, we've connected us. They are very, very successful. Let's go for the ride. You know, let's just go for the ride. And, you know, I still had an awful lot to learn, but, you know, why would I check out, you know, why would I check out with just $1 million when, you know, I could tap into their resources. And, you know, and better than that, they were just great people. They knew everybody. They knew everything. They were all in their 50s, 60s. So, you know, there was just a wealth of information, and their company was exciting, you know, and I wanted to be a part of what they were doing as well.
He believed this shining start to his property journey was the biggest aha moment that led him to achieve more great things along the way.
You never really do design your future. All you do is just visualize where you want to get to, and just let the universe take you there. And it'll introduce you to people and place, take you places that you'd never dreamed you would get to, but then you'll feel the magic and you'll feel it start to click. Go with it. Absolutely go with it. It's really important. And look, I have got and have had, you know, lots of, you know, solid mentors. I learn from everybody I possibly can. But that was Michael Hirschhorn was my closest. The three of them have all passed away now. But my closest confidant, like a father figure to me, just a fantastic human being.
For those who are wondering what happened after the dust had settled, eventually Fitzgerald worked off the company's residual debts and was able to attain his financial goals through becoming a developing success story.
So back in the 80s, it was lunch and free money. And Danefield were a massive property development company. They had over $500 million in debt. They were building six hotels. They built Brighton, Les Sands. They built the one at Bondi. Ride. They had office buildings. They had Terry Hills, the biggest office park in Australia. They had just stuff everywhere. And then I was their Queensland partner. And I just, the rules I had for them was I could use their balance sheet, but I couldn't borrow from the same banks as they did because they had a cap on their lending. So I could go to any bank. They had 28 banks that they borrowed from. I could go to any bank but their banks. So I did, I was buying land, you know, using their capital and their balance sheet right through the 1980s. And then in 1991, the Paul Keating's recession that we had to have, the banks in Australia absolutely ran out of money. And, you know, State Bank of New South Wales, for example, who doesn't exist anymore, Commonwealth Bank took them over. Westpac lost $3 billion on AGC. 28 foreign banks left Australia. So, and this is where you know, Australia really did teeter on the edge of it. And Danefield, their company, that was a public company, but they had no personal guarantees. And those three guys were wealthy, very wealthy individuals themselves. They just put their company into liquidation. And what I ended up doing was they were a partner in my business. So I bought out the receiver of all their Queensland operations. And I was funded then by the State Bank in New South Wales, ironically, who were, you know, teetering on the edge of administration themselves, but took a punt on me, you know, which worked out really well. Oh, yeah. And what I ended up with was development sites, you know, probably thousands of blocks of land to develop, and, you know, buildings. I'd built buildings for commercial office buildings and, you know, and inherited a portfolio, but with debt. And then I just had to just work my ass off to get my debt down to a comfortable level. And since then, I've literally just been developing.
However, despite all the wealth he accumulated through those deals, he has always been involved in giving back to the community.
I actually took a bit of a left turn because Michael Hirschhorn said to me, you know, when I was about 25 years old, 26, hey, what are you going to be remembered for? And I said, what do you mean? So don't be remembered for making money. Do something, give back. So when I was 20, I think six, I started a charity called Tugulawa, and that works with youth at risk, and then converted it to a school. And now we have a cutting edge school with 100 kids, but there are 100 kids who have been kicked out of mainstream schools. And what I do, I spend Monday mornings and often a Thursday morning at the school. And these days, you know, I sort of will step back from the business and spend more time at the school. That's what I really get an interest in. And the byproduct of, you know, what happened after Danefield, I think, was that Michael sort of taught me that whilst you can be young and successful, you do need to learn humility. And the only way you can possibly learn humility is to give back unconditionally. So I took that route. And that might have helped me with the banks in 1991 as well, because they saw that, you know, that I had a registered charity, that we're doing stuff. So I thought they probably helped out. Did a lot of development. And then in 1997, 98, I took another turn because I realized that Australia's biggest problem is that our baby boomers are retiring and they're going to be broke. And I knew that land was the secret. I had to communicate to them how to build wealth out of real estate. So I wrote a simple book called Seven Steps to Wealth on two premises. One is focus on the land, because land appreciates, buildings depreciate. And secondly, compound growth. And I've just literally been teaching Australians about that over the last 20 years. And that's been a big part of my energy and my efforts of my business is just teaching that. And that's what, you know, took us to the eighth edition that's been released in the last few months.
To disclose a worst investing moment that has transpired in his journey, Fitzgerald has learned that timing is crucial.
What you learn is that cash is like oxygen. If you run out of cash, it'll be over very quickly for you. And the term that, you know, any property developer throughout the years has always, you know, if you've survived 20, 30 years and all that sort of thing, then you would have had to have worked out how to survive running out of cash. And I think when I talk about probably the worst deal, and you know, there's no such thing as a bad deal, it's just bad timing. Land will always go up. It's just, have you got your timing right? And I lost $1 million once in, I bought a subdivision in Redland Bay. I bought it off a lovely family, subject to getting myself the approval, which I often do, for, you know, 300 odd blocks. And my time to go unconditional was up, and I took a punt that I was going to get the approval within 90 days, which is when I was due to settle. And I didn't get the approval, and I found out later on that there might have been some shenanigans going on with the council, all that sort of thing. And you hear about that all the time, and you know, that's just part of the trade, I suppose. But I didn't get the approval, so the bank wouldn't lend me the money to settle the block because it was zoned rural, and I couldn't settle it. And I had to pay them. They sold it, and I had to pay them the difference, and that cost me $1 million. That's the worst deal I've ever done from an active perspective. From a passive, you know, I take a long term view, and I've never done a bad deal. I always do my homework. I always do my numbers. So that where you'll get yourself into trouble in property is timing.
So inspired by John Fitzgerald's story, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Invest Story, where we'll talk about his strategy.
There's only truth in numbers. So I'm looking at land in high growth areas, and I'm trying to get the biggest block of land for the smallest amount.
The personal habits which have contributed to his success.
At the end of each day, I want to have achieved an outcome. As small as it might be, I want to have achieved an outcome. I don't want to get stuck in process.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Invest Story. Also, are you looking at buying property in 2018? Would you like expert tips and advice on the best ways you can purchase property? Whether you're a new or experienced investor, learn from the experts by downloading the Property Investment Buying Handbook. It contains the best tips and advice from 37 of Australia's leading property experts. Simply visit propertyinveststory.com and subscribe to get your copy right now. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.